Foreseeability is generally a question of fact, and it should have been in this case. The standard is whether the alleged negligence and causation was within the general field of danger that could have been anticipated. The trial court erred in this case by granting summary judgment given the facts in this, the disputed facts in this case. The case, as I'm sure the court is aware, arose out of the fact that one of an elevator of four, that it had a series of problems. The elevators within this bank had a series of problems, stopped because of an intermittent failure and injured my client. There had been experience with bad CPUs within this bank of elevators. The repair that was required was one that could not be done in the field, but we had expert testimony that that the defendant in this case should have known that there were clues that there was this problem with regard to these banks of elevators and that they should have investigated this. And in fact, they did investigate and make a repair to the elevator that was next door to this one. This was a question for the jury under these circumstances, unless this court can say as a matter of law that the precise malfunction in the precise part in the precise elevator has to be anticipated before there's an issue of fact. Unless this court can say as a matter of law that the fact that this sealed part that needed to be replaced was under warranty absolves the elevator repair company, who's supposed to be maintaining these elevators, from checking to see if there's a problem with the part. And essentially, this was a case in which the defendant relied on the reverse of res ipsa. They'd taken a deposition of the expert. The expert had said, yes, this can happen without negligence. But he also went on in every instance to say, but you had clues, and you should have done something about this. And that was also the affidavit testimony that he provided, most particularly. And excuse me, I'm still sort of one-handed because I broke my arm. So at CP 236 and 237, he said in that affidavit testimony that there were too many callbacks. That's at CP 236. At CP 237, that the excessive number of problems with all the elevators in the bank is indicative of negligent maintenance as performed by ThyssenKrupp. More and better testing beforehand, and the Anderson accident might never have happened. He goes on to say the industry's problem performing appropriate maintenance is that parts are simply operated until failure occurs. By not looking and testing the goal of preventive maintenance, the failure is not anticipated. Now, below, the defendant relied upon Adams, which is really the only case dealing with elevators except for the Kimball case, which says that you can look to a bank of elevators evidence, and that is evidence of, it can be evidence of negligence under appropriate circumstances. And Adams has nothing to do with this. They try to call this a res ipsa case, but this, which is what Adams was, there had been no indication there was any problem with that elevator, and then it had a metal fatigue failure. But that was not this case. In this case, we had expert testimony that should have gone to a jury. And it also is just a matter of common sense. And when I was looking through this, two things occurred to me. One, if it takes you 49 pages to explain to me why there's not a question of fact, there's probably a question of fact in the case. And second, I was thinking about my own experience. I'm not an electrical engineer. None of us are electrical engineers. The electrical engineers in this case had a dispute about whether, in fact, ThyssenKrupp should have known that there was something wrong with these elevators that needed to be investigated more thoroughly than they had. But I buy computers, and in our office, we bought a series of computers that Uptime had built for us about a year ago. And the hard drive went out on one of them. And we thought, wait a minute, all these computers were in a row. They were all purchased at the same time. And Uptime said to us, we'd better check the hard drives on those other computers. And that's what ThyssenKrupp didn't do here. That is an issue for the jury, and it's one that the trial court improperly decided as a matter of law. So we're asking the court to remand this case for trial, and all of these arguments that you're now going to hear about why, in fact, this was not factually a case, they're going to be great for cross-examination, but they were not appropriately determined on summary judgment. So unless the court has any further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
All right, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm David Jacoby. I'm here for ThyssenKrupp Elevator. I'll call them TKE. The problem with the appellant's position here is that the facts don't support the argument. The argument is contrary to the evidence in the case. What the evidence shows is that we began servicing these elevators on October 1, 2010. And between October 1, 2010 and October 21, 2011, there is not a single instance on either elevator 2 or any of the other elevators in this bank of four that involved a failure of a CPT. No one has ever pointed to a single incident that occurred before the Anderson incident that involved a CPT. And we walked through, the reason that our brief had to be so long, quite honestly, is the appellant's brief completely ignored what's really in the record. And what's really in the record is this. Elevator number two operated flawlessly for 4 months. Then it began experiencing problems with the doors in February of 2011. Those were resolved by June of 2011. We asked Anderson's expert, one by one, each of the incidents that involved elevator number two and the problems with the doors. Was there anything there that indicated to you or that should have indicated to TKE that there was something going on with that car top box? And his answer every single time was no. Now they argue after the fact those were, quote, intermittent failures, close quote, of the CPT. He already testified they were not. Mr. Bigler similarly testified these were door problems. They had nothing to do with the CPT. And the position they're taking is this. All problems with elevators are sort of generic. They're all, you know, they stop, the doors get stuck, things happen, they go up and down. And whenever that happens, you're supposed to suspect the CPT. There's no evidence that what happened with that elevator or any other elevator in this bank related to a failure of a CPT. They've pointed to bits and pieces of testimony. Mr. Bigler said, well, yeah, you can check the wires that are attached to the CPT. That wasn't the problem here. It wasn't that the wires were loose or they were frayed. The problem was the unit itself simply melted down internally. And it did it for the first time on October 21 at the end of the day when Ms. Anderson got in the elevator. There had never been a similar failure.
Were the prior problems with the doors, were they software issues?
They were both software and hardware. And the thing is here, Your Honor, that these car top boxes are just one part of a very elaborate system. You'll see that, for example, at CP85, there's some discussion about the controller, and they've also pointed to a time that we called MCE to talk with them about a controller. That has nothing to do with these car top boxes.
With the prior incidents and the repairs were made, was there any hardware that was replaced that was related to the computer function?
Not to the computer function, no. That what was replaced was the door hardware. What happens, and again, Mr. Bigler testified to this.
Let me ask this just so I can get a handle on it. With regard to any prior problem resulting in a callback, I guess that's the term.
That's the term that they use, right.
Callback coupled with unit two.
Right.
Elevator two.
Right.
Was the plaintiff's expert asked individually with regard to every one
each
of
one.
Those?
Each one. There were 4 days during that year.
Let me ask my next question.
I'm sorry.
With regard to the callbacks on the other elevators in the bank, the other three, was the same procedure engaged in? Of asking him with regard to each callback, or were there
he wasn't
questions
asked,
about that?
He wasn't asked, no, he wasn't asked about each callback, but on the other hand, he's also never, ever opined that any particular callback on any of the other elevators was related to a CPT failure, nor could he, because 8 years later, they're all still there and they're all fine. The only thing that happened was on elevator one, a relay that's connected to one of the CPUs on top of the elevator, and we didn't even know which one because there are three. But in any event, a relay, which is not the box. It's a completely separate component. This is kind of a loop. You know, there's this big controller on the roof of the building, and it's like the size of a refrigerator. And there's one for each elevator, and it controls essentially all the functions of each elevator. And then you have these boxes on top of the car that are little mini computers, essentially, that get information from the electromechanical components.
Let me restate my question. Come back okay. to it. So we've got your answer that with regard to all of the callbacks in car number two,
right,
that he was asked, and he answered negatively, I guess.
Right.
Okay. Then was there anything else with regard to the other three elevators that would have put them on notice? Was that question asked?
I don't believe that's in the record.
Okay.
But he also never, either in his deposition or in his affidavit, said there was a problem with a CPT or on another elevator. They're all fine. Every single one of them is still fine.
With regard to elevator one with the loose connection with the CPT, did they pull out the CPT and test it along with replacing the wiring?
It wasn't the loose connection.
Was a wiring issue.
No, there was a relay
okay.
that's attached to that car top box.
Right. So that relay
was down, and so we replaced that relay.
But and at the didn't same pull time, off the box and check it?
No, and at the same time, the other note for that callback was that there was also a door component.
Mm.
So it was a door relay and also a door controller, a restrictor down, essentially a mechanical device as part of the door that was replaced at the same time. Because when those doors jam, that's when the elevator comes to a halt.
Mm.
And that's why this had nothing to do with those door jams, because what happened here was the thing basically went into safety mode. It stopped thinking that it was getting a signal from somewhere that said, there's a problem with the elevator, I should stop operating. And then it would spontaneously start going again. And that's the supposed intermittent. But there's nothing intermittent about the thing working flawlessly. From June to late October, 80,000 trips or so, flawlessly. And then that Friday, the CPT goes out. The very next day, you see the same symptom. The day after that, you see the same symptom. How is it that for 5 months, 4.5 months, 900 trips a day, you never see that symptom? And a question that I would ask Anderson's counsel to answer is, where's the intermittent failure? Which of these prior failures is an intermittent failure of the CPT? And the answer cannot be that it was one of those callbacks on door two earlier, 5 months earlier, because their expert has already said they're not. Our expert already said they're not. And the repairman already said they're not related to the CPT. That's fiction. You know, one thing that's very, very telling here is, you know, I really didn't notice this until just recently, but they've cited this Oregon case. It's 2-2 versus Fujitec from 2014. And they've basically said, here's what they say, and this is not Washington law, believe me. Dr. Carr's assertion that TKE negligently maintained the elevators, combined with the undisputed fact that elevator 2 malfunctioned, his assertion that it was negligence, is enough to take the case to the jury. They cite 2-2. That's that 355 Oregon 319. The holding in that case is this. Because in Oregon, under their Rule 47, all you have to do to defeat summary judgment is have an attorney sign an affidavit that says, I have an expert who will opine that the defendant was negligent and he will testify at trial. That's it. That's all it takes. And that was the holding in that case, that was sufficient to defeat summary judgment. And the cases in our state are clear. It takes a lot more than that. Specific facts, opinions that are well-grounded in evidence and not merely conclusory. And that's all we had to go on here. What they're saying essentially is this. Even though there's no evidence in the way that this elevator acted throughout this period of time until October 21, 2011, when Anderson was on it, there must have been a problem, and if you'd looked for it, you would have found it. It essentially assumes the facts they're trying to prove and said if you looked for it, you would have found it. And that's not sufficient to defeat summary judgment. Thank you.
Well, this isn't an attorney's affidavit. Here's the deposition testimony that was actually submitted by the defendant in this case, and he submits it for his sort of res ipsa theory. Well, it could have happened without negligence, right? But here's what Dr. Carr actually says. This is 4 months before his declaration, where he says, CP 238, there were intermittent failings of the elevator as well as excessive entrapments of innocent people and many callbacks for all the elevators. Given all of this, ThyssenKrupp had ample warnings that all was not good with the equipment. ThyssenKrupp's maintenance was well below industry standards. And that's what he says in November. Here's what he says in July in his deposition, and this is, you know, supposedly the reason that we should be getting summary judgment, because he said, well, it could happen without negligence. Here's what he actually says. Okay, we need to, he says, tell me why you think this Anderson's accident happened, basically. You need to understand those two parts. Why it stopped was a failure in the car top board, and that sounds plausible. Now, it wasn't like there was no notice. If you look at the record I provided, there certainly are car top incidents. This isn't the doors, or incidents with that board and its relay beforehand and afterward, he says, for that matter. So it wasn't like it was a big surprise. What the stop caused by the car top, or what that showed, was that it exposed Ms. Anderson to another occurrence of the problems it's been having. That's not their story, but that's for the jury to decide. And there's a significant, I'm going on and quoting, there's a significant number of problems on this elevator and entrapments. I would say a gross number of entrapments. So, you know, even if the cardboard top hadn't shown prior problems, and he's not conceding that, he is not conceding that, which I think it did, and I'll point them out to you if you care, it still allowed this failure. They can fail intermittently where they're down some, up some. So the issue here is, and it's a factual issue, was there an intermittent failure that ThyssenKrupp should have investigated? Because he goes on, that, of course, is a clue to go look at why. That's the testimony that they're relying on for summary judgment. Then he goes on, and this is what they want you to rely on. The attorney says, I understand. The bottom line is a microprocessor computer in an elevator can fail without notice, right? Yeah, first time. But Dr. Carr's expert testimony is this wasn't the first time. And I recognize that that's not the defendant's argument. But this is an argument, and you heard today, great closing argument. But it's not an argument that the trial court should have granted summary judgment on. And you look at every single, and if you look at this brief is, well, we had an inspection. Well, there weren't as many callbacks as Dr. Carr interprets the record to show. Well, this wasn't something that could be repaired in the field, so it's not our responsibility. Well, this was under warranty, so of course we have no obligation to maintain it. And, well, you haven't told us that the precise malfunction occurred in this precise part, in this precise elevator, because ignore the car top problems that happened in the other elevators. That's wrong. And this case should go back to a jury, unless the court has any further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes our